I'm pleased to be talking with Therese Lukens. She's a local author, and we're going to be talking about her book, A Heart's Journey to Forgiveness, a memoir. Therese, thank you so much for coming in to talk about your book today.
Thank you, Susie.
So first, I just wanted to let you know that I thoroughly enjoyed reading your book. I haven't been reading much lately, but this book pulled me in. I felt a certain amount of courage coming from you in your writing, a great deal of vulnerability in sharing such a personal story. It was definitely personal. And I also found your writing style to be compelling and creative. And that's the truth. So
thank you.
You're welcome. It was, I really enjoyed reading it. With that, why don't you tell us a bit about you? Who are you? You grew up in Nebraska. How long have you lived in the Inland Northwest? What brought you here? Areas of influence that have influenced your writing, timing with your life. Go for it, Therese.
I left Lincoln, Nebraska when I was 18 after I graduated from high school. It was time for me to go and be on my own. I grew up in a large family, and I was the second to the last to leave the home. But I was ready. I had saved my money. I had bought an old Volkswagen. I wasn't 100% sure where I was going or what I was going to do. But one of my sisters invited me along with her and another group of people to move to Idaho. And I'd never been to Idaho before. We thought we were going to land in southern Idaho, but we landed in northern Idaho instead. I thought, if I don't make it by working and earning a living for myself, I can always go back home. But I never did. So I made it. I stayed, and I've been here since 1976.
A lot of this is in the book, and one of the things I thought about when I was reading is, yes, you did land here.
Yes.
But the influence, as you describe in your book, about your early life kind of was an impetus for leaving and coming here.
Yes.
So tell us about those early years and, well, hang on a second. Let's back up a minute. I just wanted to talk first a little bit about the style of how the book looks, basically.
Okay.
I wanted to mention that you wove your monthly family phone calls, which you call the Maycheck Maverick calls.
Yes.
So once a month, your siblings and you get together, or were getting together, maybe you still are. And you had, those were the beginnings of each chapter.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So it was really compelling, and it's an interesting way to jump into your personal story. Why don't you just talk a little bit about that?
The Maycheck Maverick calls were created by my middle sister, Diane, and they occurred during the COVID when none of us could travel. And she wanted us to stay connected. And so she said, let's do weekly calls. When I got her email for that, I deleted it because I thought, there's no way I'm going to get on the phone with all of my siblings and try and have conversation, because it was always chaotic at home growing up. Chaotic when we tried to talk about mother's needs as an elderly woman. I thought, I'm not going to do this. But then again, one of my other sisters said, well, everybody is tuning in, but you're not. So I thought, okay, I will give it a try. And I was pleasantly surprised at how, number one, organized they were, and number two, how people had to take turns. There was always a facilitator, and if it wasn't your turn to talk, you were told, it's not your turn to talk, so be quiet. And each week, one of the siblings would come up with a question, and then we would all have some time to think about it and then talk about it. I started my chapters with some of those conversations simply because a writing buddy of mine said, if you start your chapters with these conversations, it will show and tell more about your family, because the family that I came from and the family that I wrote about is a big part of the story. So that's why I started each chapter with a bit of the conversation from a Maycheck Maverick call.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Your family and the dynamics of your family really influenced this book in so many ways. Yes. I mean, it's basically the basis
yes.
of the book. Do these Maychek Maverick calls that start each chapter, they're kind of separate
yes.
at the top.
Yes.
Do they interact with that theme of that chapter?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes, especially when I'm talking about my grandparents, the calls that we had centered around the grandparents, those words I used exactly. And then others were a little bit later on. They don't exactly match perfectly, but it gives you a taste of each of my siblings because everybody has a different take on, number one, the type of questions. Like my little brother would ask questions about, do you remember the car? And it's like, what? I don't remember any cars. But for him, those were important questions to him because his life revolves around cars. And then I have a sister who is a nurse, and she would always come up with questions that had to do with, do you remember the injury? And I don't remember the injuries. But everybody has a different perspective, a different take, and that's what made those calls so darn interesting.
Exactly. And I think I'm wondering if you're seeing your siblings seeing things different than yes. you, influenced, and just kind of woke something up in you.
It did. And when my father committed suicide, no one in my family spoke about it. It was a conversation that no one had. So it was this elephant in the living room, but we were ignoring the elephant. So we had to find our own way through our grief. But these Maychek Maverick calls, we were all adult enough and processed enough of our dad's suicide that we were actually able to talk about it for the first time as siblings. And I was able to ask, when it was my turn to ask questions, I was able to clarify and validate some of the things that I thought had happened. And they indeed did. So it was a great sounding board for me in writing the book.
Right. There had to be something that kind of would trigger a deeper coming to forgiveness.
Yes.
In you from some of the things that you describe in the book, your mother's emotional distance and
yes.
your father's suicide.
Yes.
So it sounds like these phone calls and your kind of getting to know your siblings in a different way.
Yes.
Helped bring that to another level.
It did. Understanding my siblings and just everybody's different perspective. We were all at a different age when the tragedy occurred in our lives. So, of course, everybody was at a different point in their lives. I was 13 and my youngest brother was 10. And then my oldest brother was 23 and everything in between. Some had left home by then, some actually expected the event to occur. And so just differing ages, the youngest kids in the family, I have to say, are always the last to know, always the last to know. And then we rely on the older siblings to help us understand what was going on and get some of the details that we as younger siblings don't get.
I wonder if that's partly because they're still being protected.
Probably. That was one of the things that I talked about with a friend of mine who is a counselor. And when I talked to her about why would my mother lie to me about my father's death? Why didn't she tell me the truth? And she said she was probably trying to protect you. But as a 13-year-old, I wanted the truth. And if somebody wasn't giving me the truth, then they were lying. And it was just this black and white thinking that I had. And I just couldn't understand why in the world my mother would do that. So,
mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things that, you know, the central theme, so to speak, is the fact that your father committed suicide. But I really picked up more that your mother's relationship with you was almost bigger. You know, it wasn't just one incident.
Yeah.
It was a theme in your life.
Yes, yes. And that's the difference in personalities in parents. My mother was not a emotional connector for me. And I'm not 100% sure why. My father, on the other hand, had this extremely tender heart. And one of the questions that I asked one of my siblings was I really Dad's favorite? And she said, yeah, you were. He called you his Pooka. And as the youngest daughter, I was the favorite daughter of his. And I don't know what went on between him and my mother. I honestly don't know, but she was not one to cuddle, to pat on the back, to ask, how are you feeling? But my father, I mean, he just had
polar
this...
Polar opposite.
Oh, polar opposites. Yes. Yes.
So the nurturing didn't come from where you might expect it.
Exactly. Right? Exactly right.
Right. So what changes... I keep wanting to get back to, when did you start to feel something inside yourself that started to be called forgiveness? Maybe for your father, for your mother, and for yourself.
Yeah. Forgiveness did not cross my mind until I had confrontations with our oldest son. And when those confrontations began, and there was nothing I could do to change his mind about anything, it forced me to sit down and take a look at what is it that I need to change. And that's when I began to take a look at the anger that I'd been carrying around for a very, very long time and didn't even identify it as anger, but it was rage. I was mad at my dad. I was mad at my mom. And growing up in the Catholic Church, you don't get mad at your parents. You're supposed to be honoring them and loving them. But I was mad. And that anger I had never confronted until my confrontations with my oldest son. And I began to take a look at my own personal anger and realizing this is attached to my dad's death, my mother's emotional distance. And there is something that I need to do in order to get over this anger.
Were you surprised at, well, when your oldest son started doing whatever he was doing,
yeah.
Were you surprised at that anger in yourself?
I was. I had felt it before, but I'd never sat down and opened the box, so to speak, marked anger. Because in my growing up years, emotions were not discussed. So someone could be angry, but they would never say they were angry. But I would see arguments. I would see things fly through the air. I mean, there was definite anger in the household, but nobody said, this is what anger looks like, and this is what you do instead of getting angry. And so I had to learn that on my own. I had to become emotionally intelligent on my own.
That's a hard one.
It is.
I just want to remind our listeners, I'm here, this is Susie Perez, and I'm here with Therese Lukens. She's a local author and has written a book, Heart's Journey to Forgiveness, a memoir. And we're talking about the book and the process of growing up and finding all the things out about ourselves. And that's what you put into the book.
Yes, yes. It was probably my therapy is what it was. And I have always journaled. I started journaling when I first got married. And these journals, I would touch on things from my past, try and understand what was going on. Eventually, I wrote more in my journals about processing my dad's suicide, admitting my anger. And as I wrote, I realized, oh, this is the story that's been in my head for a really long time. And I think I'm just going to start writing it out and see what happens.
And you did.
I did.
How long did it take you to kind
of... It took me about, I would say, a full year to what writers call throwing up on your shoes. You just get it all out. And then I belonged to a writer's group, and I hired one of the women from my writer's group to help me edit it. She would look at each chapter, and she noticed that I would not admit my emotions in my writing. And she said, surely you must have felt something here. So she is the one who pulled emotions out of me so that it wasn't just the facts, ma'am, mm-hmm. in the book. And with her help, I was able to get it out into one manuscript and then submit the manuscript. And of course, then it goes through a whole nother editing process. But a lot of work had already been done before I submitted it into an editor's hands in a publishing company.
It's so interesting listening to you talk. Because in the book, I didn't get a sense of your anger until the end. And but I kept waiting for it mm-hmm. because some of the things that you described from your childhood and then moving forward, I picked up dissatisfaction,
yes.
things like that. So I'm wondering, forgiveness had to come about. It's hard. It's you have to dig deep for that. And you did.
Yes.
And so the book became part of that process.
Yes.
I think, as we mentioned already, what else was, well, you said that the situation with your older son also kind of started triggering things. And it comes to mind that nothing happens by accident.
That's right.
And your older son was going to do whatever he had to do.
Exactly.
But here you found a way to go towards forgiveness.
Yes, yes. And I think what happened with me realizing that I couldn't do anything to change my son's mind about the choices he was making, it sort of opened a wound that I didn't realize was there, but simply there was nothing that I could do with regards to my father's choice in committing suicide. And you feel terribly helpless when someone has committed suicide. And even as a 13-year-old, in my mind, I'm going, was it my fault? Did I do something wrong? And then it became, doggone it anyway, he left me, and doggone it anyway, what am I going to do now? And there's this great big sense of just emotional carnage. I felt abandoned. I felt angry. I felt sad. I felt confused. I didn't know what to do. And it seemed so out of the blue for me that my father would do something like this. And yet he did. And I couldn't attach his action to anybody. I couldn't blame anybody for it. And that was hard. It was very, very hard to take a look at that.
Do you think that his actions, was there a point in time where you came to the understanding that it wasn't really about you?
Oh, very good point.
He was suffering.
Very good point. And as a child, it's all selfish thinking. Sure. It's all about me. He left me and I am mad. But he had served in World War II in the China, Burma, India theater. And my youngest brother did a lot of research with regards to that particular part of World War II. And he told me, you know, Dad saw some pretty horrendous, horrendous things. So he probably had post-traumatic stress syndrome, which wasn't even diagnosed, I think, in any of the medical books until 1972. So he was being treated for depression. And for depression back in the early 1970s, it was tranquilizers. And, I mean, what's a man going to do?
Right. And he was just a young boy that went overseas.
A young man that went over there, and he came back and didn't have any therapy, didn't work his way through it, self-medicated with alcohol, and tried very hard to raise his family and be a good husband and be a good father. And it broke him apart.
Sure.
Broke him apart.
So at that point in time, was there a point where you realized it wasn't about you? You
yes.
grew up, you
yes.
came to
yes.
Idaho, and then you could start the process of forgiveness.
Yes, yes.
But including your mother, too.
Yes. And my mother lived longer. She died, I think, in her early 90s. So she was around for a long time after my dad's death. And of course, I wanted to connect with her like I had connected with my father, and there was no way that was going to happen. So I had to learn to allow my mom to be who my mom was and allow our relation to be what it was. And it wasn't what I wanted. Of course, I wanted a connection, an emotional connection. I wanted her to understand me like my dad had.
Sure.
But she didn't. And so I learned to love her and to accept where she was as a person. And we never were close, but I became okay with that. It was okay.
So a lot of work went into this book.
Oh, my goodness.
And you have done amazing work to get to where you're at through your life situations that have been given to you. What has been the response of this book? Because you didn't write it just for yourself.
No.
It was a process. It was a memoir.
Yes.
And yeah, it was. There's cathartic benefits to it. But what has been the response of other people, friends, family, and the greater listen or reading audience?
My greatest fear was what my siblings would think of it. And two of my siblings, two or three of them, asked me to change their names in the book. And I thought, okay, I certainly definitely will. But I was curious to know, what would they think since my story is different from theirs? But every one of them had a positive response. And I wasn't 100% sure who this book would affect. It has affected different people in different ways. Some of them have talked to me about, I had no idea this was going on in your life. Others said, this is an extremely personal book. I'm surprised that you wrote it. And others have just enjoyed it as a good story. And it has, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but it has given me opportunity for speaking engagements and to reaching out. It's amazing when people find out that I've written this book, they want to tell me their stories about their experience with suicide. And I value those stories so much.
There's a lot of threads, people that maybe had emotionally distant mothers,
yes,
or fathers, and the suicide aspect with your father. So there's a lot of different parts. And I wanted to introduce you as the author and a mother.
Yes.
And now you're also a school teacher, but you know, how this journey has affected you as a mother. There's quite a bit in the book about that, if you read into it quite a bit.
And yes.
So how did your family, your closer family, you mentioned that your older son, you know.
I had to have breakfast with him to show him that part of the manuscript that involved him in the book, just to make sure I was telling the story in a positive, in an accurate manner. And he said, yes, it was told correctly. And my middle son has read the book, and he congratulated me on my being able to publish. I don't know if my youngest son has read it or not. My husband read it, and his responses were so, so good. Parts of it, he cried. Parts of it, he laughed. So even though he lived through my story, he still had an emotional response to the story. So I was happy about that.
Oh, that's great. So any advice that you've been through this, your own personal experience, but any advice you'd give to others experiencing similar challenges in some way in their life, how to look at that when you start realizing that it might be holding you back, or it's something you want to deal with. How can some people go about that? Maybe just advice.
I had two very, very close friends with whom I could speak with candidly about everything that was going on. And I knew that whatever I said to them would be kept with them. And I knew that whatever wisdom they had for me would indeed be wisdom for me. I would have to say that when someone commits suicide, it is not an easy emotion or event to process. And I would say, don't process it on your own. It's impossible. You will put it inside of you, and then it will come out in the oddest, strangest ways towards other people. So I would just suggest, whether it's a counselor that you pay, whether it's friends that you have coffee with, talk about it. Find people that can understand you and not judge you or judge the person who committed suicide either. But definitely talk about it.
Because you're affected by that suicide because Absolutely. You love them.
Yes. No. Yes.
So thank you. That's great advice. What's next for you?
Next for me, I have a book reading at the library on Saturday, September 9th from 3 to 4 p.m. That is an opportunity to meet the author, also ask questions, and perhaps meet other people who are on the journey of learning to survive after a suicide.
And I'll say again, that was kind of the reason for the book, but there's so much more in it.
There is. Thank you, Susie.
Yeah. And any last parting thoughts?
I just appreciate that I've been able to have this interview with you. You just never know when you're going to run into people that you've known for a while and say, hey, you want an interview? Yes. Right. Thank you.
Yep. Well, I think, you know, local authors are great, and we have a really great writing community.
Yes, we do.
But you took the challenge. You took the courage. You found your courage to actually put this story, your life memoir, into paper.
Yes.
So that others, people you'll never know,
yes,
can read it and
yes,
possibly get something out of it that will help them, or, as you say, just a fun read.
Yes.
Which it has that too. So I just want to thank you for coming in and spending this time. The book is available how?
The book is available here in Sandpoint at DeLuna's Restaurant and Gift Shop, the corner bookstore. It is at the library. Then it's also on Barnes & Noble, Redemption Press, and Amazon.
And the name of the book again is?
A Heart's Journey to Forgiveness.
By Therese Lukens. That's
L-U-I-K-E-N-S.
Yes. So there you go. Well, thanks again for coming in.